Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Robert Coulson, senior correspondent here at RFERL. Welcome, Rob. Thanks for joining me by phone today.
Hey, thanks a lot. Good to talk to you again.
All right. Well, it's a Monday podcast, but I should mention that we're actually recording this on Friday because Monday is a holiday in the Czech Republic where we're located. It's Jan Hus Day. But as always, our subject matter lies further east. And while this podcast is called The Week Ahead in Russia, I do want to turn back to last week and the momentous thing that happened in Russia on Wednesday. The state held a vote. Well, the vote actually was a week long, starting on June 25th, a vote in which, according to the official results, nearly 78% of those voting approved constitutional changes, one of which enables Putin, who's been in power for more than 20 years, to seek two more terms as president, potentially keeping him in the Kremlin until 2036. Now, there's a lot of analysis about why he did it, why he's given himself this option. But I just want to dwell for a second on the enormity of it. In a country with many of the trappings of democracy, the same person who was first elected president in March 2000 may still be president in March 2036. And I'll just mention one other fact. The Constitution was changed when Putin was prime minister in 2008 or 2009. To lengthen presidential terms to 6 years instead of four. Now, so if that change and this one being made now had never been made, then May 7th of this year, 2020, would probably have been Putin's last day in office after four-year terms separated by a four-year stint as prime minister in 2008 to 2012. Sorry about all those numbers. But the point is, If the Constitution had not been changed, Putin would presumably be out of office by now. And yet, Putin has repeatedly said throughout the years that he is not power hungry and is against rule for life. Has suggested that he wouldn't change the Constitution in order to prolong his rule. I'll stop now, Rob, and ask you a question. Putin's spokesman said last week that the vote was, in essence, a, quote, triumphal referendum on trust in Putin, unquote. Now, we know that it was not actually a referendum, according to Russian law. But, Rob, would you say it was a triumph for Putin?
First, I'd just like to say I hadn't realized that what you said about Putin's term being over now. It's really an amazing thing to think about. Worth taking a second on that. But it's interesting that Peskov said that, you know, even before the voting was going on, that it was a triumphal referendum on trust in Putin, which really shows the sort of political theater nature of the whole process, which going back all the way to January when Putin first proposed the amendments. It's very difficult to say that it's a triumph for Putin in any sense, although because Putin controls all the levers of media and everything and politics in Russia, he'll certainly be able to spin it that way. But the process was so forced, so far divorced from any normal legal process for properly amending a constitution. The plebiscite, I mean, you can't even call it a referendum because they specifically avoided following the laws on referendums, which they earlier put into place in order to make referendums more difficult to hold, because they didn't want people making referendums on Putin. Right. You know, independently, grassroots organizations were trying it back when they changed the law to have referendums on various Putin policies, and they stifled that. So this week-long voting, the irregularities of people just going around door-to-door with urns and bringing people out, the allegations of just massive fraud going on a level that we haven't seen since about 2011, the Duma elections, when United Russia got a constitutional majority. It's if anything, you could say it was a sort of slap in the face to Putin, I would say, if he's looking at the real numbers, which I'm sure they are in the Kremlin, they're probably thinking about the ways that they're going to need to bolster their authoritarian methods and going forward in the future, because it was a pretty weak showing, I would say.
Right. And I mean, that leads me to think about several analysts have been saying that one of the effects of the adoption of these changes in the Constitution will probably be kind of an increase in lawlessness or arbitrariness on the part of the state. As you say, because it's the whole process has exposed kind of weaknesses. And also because of the new Constitution, there are contradictions there that kind of weaken the rule of law, according to analysts, in part because there are statements in the first two parts of the chapters or sections of the Constitution that were left untouched. Again, similar to the reason they did not go with a referendum, because changing the first two parts of the Constitution requires a much more onerous process. So anyway, there are things in there, such as Russia's a secular state, and there's equality for pretty much every group, every ethnic group, languages. And those things are arguably undermined by some of the new principles in the Constitution, the faith in God as kind of a core principle, and the definition of marriage as a union between man and woman, and also the way one of these new amendments holds up the Russian language as the language of the, quote, state-forming group, I believe it is. So these things, at least arguably, kind of contradict the guarantees of equality in the first two kind of less touchable or changeable parts of the Constitution. So what I'm trying to get at here is that analysts are saying, you're saying the Kremlin's probably going to be thinking about how it can tighten the screws, and they seem to have a tool to do so.
Yeah, no, the Constitution now is so complicated and so muddled that almost anything can be done. When I was watching the sort of protest that happened toward the end of the voting on Wednesday in Moscow, one of the people said, nobody wants to live in a dictatorship, much less a legalized dictatorship. And that's really what it is. And Yabloko, Moscow City Duma Deputy Sergei Mitrokhin, who happened to just be at the protest, said that this referendum, or this plebiscite, we should say, puts a period at the end of Russia's brief aspirations toward being a rule of law state. The opposition always, for all its flaws, held up the Constitution as at least something that could be grasped at and worked with. And now that even that is gone, the sort of core principle of the fundamental law as something that could be held up against the Kremlin and saying, look, you're breaking this law, is certainly much weakened now.
Yeah, it's definitely compromised. You mentioned the protest on July 1st in the evening on Pushkin Square in Moscow. One thing, and you also mentioned the fact that the falsifications that or evidence of probable falsifications, seem to be pointing to perhaps a level on par with or unseen since the 2011, I believe it was early December, Duma elections that prompted, along with Putin's decision to return to the presidency in 2012, those elections prompted the wave of protests that kind of culminated, or didn't end, but that included the Bolotna protest on the eve of Putin's inauguration in 2012. And those were obviously large protests, and Putin weathered them. And I guess one question is, the vote certainly revealed that, I think the official figure would be something like 15 million people voting no. you know, and it's a little bit above 20%, and then perhaps the real figure is substantially higher. So, but then we have the coronavirus. You know, lockdowns are over, but I guess the question is, you know, when and in what form, you know, is opposition to these new things going to take, or is the prospect of sort of 16 more years, you know, from now, of Putin going to kind of put a damper on things?
Yeah, that's a big question going forward. It was interesting. Navalny posted a blog post immediately after the polls closed on Wednesday, and he basically made the argument that, you know, this move by Putin closes off basically legal, peaceful means, any hope of legal, peaceful means of transitioning away from Putinism on a national level. He said that local elections are still really important and the opposition needs to fight them, and that's basically the last little flower of democracy that's left in Russia. But he said, you know, as far as national change goes, I'm paraphrasing because I just read it on Wednesday, but that basically the opposition needs to test how far the Putinists, the government is willing to go to keep them down. How many arrests are they willing to make? How violent are they willing to be with protests? And that's the only way. Navalny seemed to say that that's the only way that we can hope to see any national political change in Russia going forward. And that's a really frightening prospect, I think.
Yeah, that does sound like sort of a frightening prospect indeed. I mean, in a way, it's, as you, again, it's sort of a return to kind of, you know, what was happening late at the end of 2011. It sounds like also the kind of what the state was ready and willing to do being tested. And another thing you mentioned, you know, he speaks about local elections and, you know, there will be the Duma elections, which are supposed to be in 2021. Still talk about those possibly being earlier. But there's also, I believe, talk about the possibility of using these kind of longer form voting for regular elections. And I'm not sure what stage that discussion is at, but I think that's another thing that's going to worry, you know, opponents of Putin, because, you know, I think there's arguments that it sort of the week long process and other aspects of the voting kind of increase the chances for fraud.
Yeah, that definitely made them a lot made falsification much easier in many different ways. I think it's hard to tell because the opposition has for a long time not really had any faith in elections in Russia at all, and for good reason.
Right.
But going forward, especially you talked about the Duma elections and things like that, it will be interesting to see. And I don't think it's really predictable how it will work out because the new constitutional changes do, in theory, give the Duma much more authority over the executive branch and the formation of the government and that sort of thing, technically. I mean, again, in Russia, laws are more observed in the breach than anything else. But so it's possible, because of that consideration, that the Kremlin will be much more manipulative in the Duma elections than they have been, or much more similarly manipulative than as they have been in the past. And, you know, that's also something to be keeping an eye on. It's interesting. We've seen so many amendments to the Constitution, and even experts cannot predict what the result of that will be, what the structure of the government will be, how power will really flow among the institutions that are set up in the new constitution.
Right. I think people to some degree are throwing up their hands a little bit. And as you say,
exactly.
It's always hard to determine, you know, how the law is going to be interpreted and how it's going to be implemented. So we'll see what happens with those elections. And then in future, of course, there's still the question of whether Putin will use this option he's given himself to run again in 2024.
Yeah, but it's hard to imagine why he would create that option if he didn't intend to use it. And he's already hinted pretty strongly that he would.
Yeah, he did hint, in his last few speeches during the vote, and then also right after the vote, where he said, essentially, I need more time because the Soviet Union collapsed a very short time ago in historical terms, which I think was a statement that I found quite striking, and other people as well. I mean, Kira Yarmish, Navalny's spokeswoman, I believe, said, this guy's been in power 20 years and he's saying he needs more time.
Exactly. I've always said that one of the most damning things about Putin's reign in 20 years is that if you really had any shame and looked at things in a reasonable way, he would really be ashamed of the fact that poll after poll shows that the vast majority of Russians, even a greater percentage than the ones who support him, say that they don't see any alternative to Putin for Russia. And that's just an amazing thing to think. He's been in power for 20 years, and the main thing he's achieved is a sense that there is no alternative in a country of more than 140 million people to him. And I think that's a really damning assessment of Putinism, from the point of view of the development of a country.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an interesting way of looking at it as well. And I think, especially because he has said in the past, that there are plenty of people who could govern Russia. I mean, he's kind of gone back and forth on that, I guess. But he has said that in the past.
And then to return where we started, the Tesco statement about whether it's a triumph for Putin. I mean, it's worth noting that Putin has never put himself up for anything close to a free and fair election in his entire political career. So, I mean, how can you have a referendum on trust in Putin? And that's the fact.
Right. And just to continue that, I mean, Peskov said that after the vote, and but during the vote and before it, the state, the government, the Kremlin were being quite careful not to term it that way. Most of the ads were about the other amendments. They weren't talking about it was almost like the elephant in the room, the amendment that lets Putin run for two more terms. So, but then right after it, Peskov is saying, saying this, that it's a triumph. And then Putin also saying, thank you. So
one of the demonstrators in Moscow had the funny quote. He said, they have all these amendments, but everybody knows that it's just about the one about Putin's additional terms. And he said, all the other ones are just buntiki, little ribbons, little ribbons and bows.
Yeah, little ribbons. All right. That's an interesting description. And I think we'll leave it at that. We're running out of time. So, Rob, thanks very much for joining me. Great insights.
All right. Thanks a lot. I hope to talk to you later.
Okay. I'll be back next Monday for another Week Ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for my Week in Russia newsletter. Thanks for listening.